Right eye dominant.
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 This is the Right Eye Dominant Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Right Eye Dominant Podcast. I am your host, Nick Toro Jr. Before I jump into today's episode, I want to make a little clarification. Originally, I had thought about doing one episode with two guests, and this will all make sense in a minute. Both photographers actually had produced books about the city of Berlin. But once I got into the interviews, I realized that there was just so much good conversation that each photographer warranted his own episode. So today is the first of two Berlin-centric photo book conversations. The first conversation is with Christian Reister. He is a Berlin-based photographer, and he created a book called Berlin Nights. We had a really great conversation about music and lomography and prowling the streets of a big city with a camera, and got into the details of Christian's really great book, Berlin Nights. So this will be part one of a two-part podcast, Berlin Extravaganza. Thank you for joining me today, and let's get into my conversation with photographer Christian Reister. All right.
Let's go.
All right, cool. Well, welcome to the Right Eye Dominant Podcast, Christian Reister. Did I pronounce that correct? Reister?
Yes, that's the American Reister. In Germany, you would say Reister.
Reister. Well, that's Reister. What I'm going to say. It sounds a little bit more, it's got more flair to it when you say it.
Do you think so?
Yes. Okay. So the reason why we're speaking today is I would like to talk to you about your book, which I have right here, Berlin Nights, which I know you know this, but the listeners don't know, that I bought my first day visiting Berlin in August. So it was nice to be able to go out into the city and then
Where did you buy it? Can you recall the store?
It's at Hackershore Markt?
Yeah, it's Neurochitan.
There's like a place upstairs in the back.
Right. Right.
Kind of like
a gallery. They have a lot of urban art and Sanskrit stuff, and also one or two books in one of them.
Yeah.
It's mine. It's
great. Yeah, that's cool. So I was excited to see it and pick it up. And so I think I also told you that I was approached by another photographer who also, he has a book of photos of Berlin coming out next month. So I thought I would talk to each of you individually and explore the way that you are interpreting Berlin and see how he's doing his work, and also just sort of two book reviews, but also two perspectives on a great city, not only a great city, but a city that it's one of my favorite places in the world. I've been three times, so I really enjoy it. So Christian, are you currently in Berlin?
Yes, I am, of course.
And that's where you live? Okay.
Yes, since about 25 years or something.
Oh, wow. Great. Well, maybe that's a good place to start. Can you maybe tell me where you started, where you grew up, and how you came to a life in photography?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in southern Germany, an area where it was much more on the countryside. And when I was a teenager, I was very much into music. I was playing in a band, and that kept me there until the age of 25. And then a couple of things came together. The band broke up. My girlfriend went away, and one came after the other. And the guitarist of that band and me were thinking about going somewhere else and just try it again with another concept and music. And we knew Berlin from several tours we had, so we knew a lot of places here. And I mean, it was in 1997, and at that time Berlin was really a big playground for adults, you know. So very different to today, I think, and compared to our living that we had in the southern German countryside, it was just crazy world. Let's go there and everything start again. And this is how I came to Berlin. I wanted to make music here and I started a couple of music projects here. But very soon, I don't know, after 1 or 2 or 3 years, I had enough of making music because things were repeating and band split up again and always some trouble. And when I was 27 or something, I had the feeling it's not the same when you go on stage as you go on stage with 17 or something. You know, for me, it was always very youth thing and a band thing. And so at that time, I got into web design because it was that time where the internet came and everybody who could hold a mouse could build maybe a website or two. And I really got into this web design business. And then later came photography. So I was, at the end of my 20s when I discovered photography for me. And I think at that time it was a little bit of a substitute for the music, because when I was working with this web design stuff, it, of course, it's also a little bit creative, but it's very much in the service of the client. And it's not a real free arts thing or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this is how I got into photography, because then I had a field again where I could do whatever I like. Where it wasn't important what the result was. It was just in the beginning, the first 1, 2, or 3 years, I was just fooling around, playing around with toy cameras and stuff. Yeah. So was that the question?
Yeah, no, that's a good start, because you said several things that already have me wanting to ask a follow-up. So that's great. So first of all, I want to know what kind of music you were making when you were in a band, and what instrument were you playing?
I was the bass player and always a little bit responsible for the graphic design, for the image, for the how can we sell it and how to make the booking, the marketing and the stuff. And the style was something like independent pop, alternative pop, somewhere between, I don't know, Björk and No Doubt or something like that. We had a female singer.
Oh, okay.
You can find it on Spotify now. I was really surprised that the old friend of mine, the guitarist, now put it up on Spotify.
Under what's the band name?
The band name is Waiting For, written as one word, and a question mark behind it. So,
all right.
I mean, you may be the 20th listener or something.
Yeah, I'll put it on repeat and maybe you'll make 25 cents off of the whole transaction.
I wasn't the composer, so I think...
Oh, you don't get anything.
Nothing, so.
You don't get anything. Well, that's cool. I also was a musician. I played drums in a band probably around the same time in the mid-90s, and... We were I think we were probably in the same world on opposite ends of the globe, but playing in the same kind of venues, I'm sure. But it's interesting, actually, that you didn't come to photography until later. When you first jumped into it, did you gravitate towards film? You said you were playing with some toy cameras, or was it film digital, or like what was sort of the first formats that you played with?
The first camera was a plastic Lomo action sampler camera for film.
Yes.
And I saw this in a museum's shop. I just thought, oh, this is crazy. 4 images on 1 frame. What is it? Buy it and try it out. And the first thing was that I didn't manage to put the film in. Somehow it broke. And then, yes, but this was... my first touch into photography, and it wasn't about photography. It was just, I was looking at the pictures that they had on the promo pictures.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's crazy. This doesn't look like photography. It's all a little bit broken and blurred and crazy colors. It was just playing around in the beginning.
I'm genuinely surprised to hear that was the first camera that you used, but I'm thrilled and encouraged, because I think I've used every one of their cameras in. And I think I've had a similar experience. Like the first time I use them, it never works. Right. Or, and then why am I continually like giving them more money? But then I figure out like there's always a little trick or something. And then, and then you can figure it out, and it does. And it definitely creates a unique image style for sure.
I still really like the Lomo LCA, the original Lomo camera. It's just a nice tool. It's so lovely.
That particular camera. So I went to college and got my degree in fine arts photography. And after school, kind of lost my passion for, I didn't want to do commercial work. And so slowly but surely kind of drifted away from my interest. And then I bought an LCA. I was in New York at the time. And that experience using that camera, I think I credit it with rekindling my passion for photography, which I'm still clearly connected to today. But it was the ease of use, the unique image. But it's out of anything they've released, it's certainly the best quality camera that they've produced. But and even then, I've gone through like three of them now because screws pop out or
then it's always good to have another camera, and you can put two cameras together, and then but it's interesting. My first city where I was with the Lomo LCA was New York.
Really? You visiting, or what were you doing there?
I was visiting for the first time New York. It was in 2001. That's, 2 weeks before the towers came down.
I was there. That's exactly the time I was there. Cool. Wow. That's great. I mean, it's a small world for sure, even in these big cities. So let's talk a little bit about shooting in Berlin and what led to the book. So now the name of the book is Berlin Nights. So did you find that you were drawn originally to shooting at night, or shooting, obviously dealing with longer exposures or unpredictable lighting situations? Was that always an interest to you?
Not always. I started with the Lomo, but then later I of course learned how to photograph properly, sharp and everything. Right. And then I photographed in color the first 10 years. I wasn't interested in black and white at all. And then I switched to digital. But then there came a point where when everything was too clean, too perfect, too nice, I didn't like the digital look anymore. And I just wanted to go back to this playing, you know, don't know what the result is, just photographing and shooting with your gut. Do you say it like this?
Yeah.
And so the black and white film photography was, after 10 years of color photography. And there was a project before, a book before the Berlin Nights book. So normally I don't plan any things like I have this and this topic and I'm very interested in that, and I do a research and then I go there and then I photograph for this and that time. It's more organic. I'm photographing anyway. If I go somewhere, I have a camera. And when I went to black and white and to this analog film stuff, maybe one reason for photographing mainly at night was that I didn't trust it. If it would really work in daytime, I would still photograph in color and digital. But at night, I was doing my experiments and stuff. Yeah, the first, after 3 years or something, when I was working on these Berlin Nights pictures, I did a first self-published book, and this had no Berlin in the title or something. It was more personal. Title, Alle Katzen Grau, which means all cats are gray. A little bit poetic for Berlin Nights.
Yeah, and that's a Cure reference too, right?
Yes, that's this title by The Cure, but in Germany, it's not so well known. In Germany, there's more the Alle Katzen, the German is a saying.
Oh,
and
interesting.
And I was, and it's a little bit not so clear what does this saying mean. Some say, it's late at night, you're drunk, and every girl is all right, you know, all cats are gray. And there's several meanings. And then when I had this title, I was thinking about it and doing some research, in what context do people use it? And then, of course, I found the Cure title, which is great. I mean, Cure is, why not?
just to circle back, so you're shooting black and white film at night. The experimentation, like you said, is obviously a driving force behind that decision. Mm-hmm. When did you realize that it was, because I look at the book and I think that certainly, I mean, there's a cohesiveness to the body of work. It's clear to me that, you know, shooting it on film was definitely, I don't know if it was an important component, but it's obvious in the book that that's how you were doing these. Did you feel like you had settled on stylistically an approach that you were happy with and then went further with it? I mean, talk to me a little bit about the journey then into what led to this particular book. Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, this new work for me, this black and white work, was a big mixture between several styles. I was shooting with flash sometimes. I was shooting without flash. I was taking kind of portraits, some more street photography approach, also landscapes. So in the beginning, when I was putting together the first book, I had a real mess of everything I produced the 3 years before, and then brought together a book that I just thought would work how it is made. And in this first book, there are more sharp images also, because Berlin Nights, nearly everything is blurred. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the reason why I'm talking about the other book is that after I had done this, I had the feeling that this project is not over. The book was good. I liked it, and it was successful in a small, it's just 200 copies, and it, but blogs wrote about it, and I had some press stuff and exhibitions and everything. It was all nice. And I had the feeling that I just want to go on with this kind of night photography stuff. And then I published some zines and stuff, and I wasn't thinking about another book. But then I was on a symposium in London, where I was invited to show my work, what I was doing. And Hoechst Minipress, the publisher who released the Berlin Nights book, they were the sponsor or even the...
Oh, they were they organized the symposium. They were the...
Yeah, right. The organizer. Yeah. Yeah, the host. Yeah, right. And yeah, as I said, I was invited to present my work, and I had a 10-minute slot. And at the time I was in New York, then they invited me and I had to fly to London. It was a little bit crazy. At first I thought, no, I don't want to do this. But my wife said, no, you have to go there. I mean, London and Hoechst Minipress, and why, yeah, you're right. So, and Nick Turpin invited me. I don't know if you know him. Whatever. Yeah. I presented my work there by showing a photo film. You can see this on my website too. It's kind of a slideshow with music. Okay. Just made for this film. And so, yeah, I showed this film and people were impressed. And the first one who wanted to say something was Martin Osborne from Hoechst Minipress. And I thought, that's great. I mean, it's a really great publisher, but they only do books about London and Brighton, which was at the time they had only English topics. But then one led to the other, and half a year later they contacted me. They would like to make a book with me, and I thought, yeah, that's cool, why not? And then I threw everything on the table, from the first book, from the 2 or 3 years after that, from my scenes and everything. And for me, from the first moment on, I saw this as a chance that some other people look at my work, you know, because I had did the editing and everything from my self-published books. And now there were experienced book designers and everything. I thought, that's great. So now you take a look and make your own book out of my work, your own interpretation. This is how we made these books. And also the title, this was the suggestion of the publisher, because from a London side, London publisher who only does books about London, it makes sense to call this Berlin Nights. While me, from as a Berliner, for a Berlin audience, would never call it Berlin Nights. But it was clear that this is an international book, that this would come to places where I am not, and it's outside of Germany, and it's somewhere in America, and I don't know where. And so, yeah, if you think it sells, if you write Berlin Nights on the topic, I'm fine with it. Huh. And then we did the sequence together. and they had really some great inputs. They sorted out everything that was nice pictures or more sharp pictures. And I mean, I like this gorilla picture. I have some pictures that everybody wants to print, but they didn't want to have it in the book, you know?
Huh, okay.
And they said, just the blurry stuff. Let's ask, do you have more blurry stuff? Do you have some? What else do you have?
Yeah.
And so it was very interesting. So I think there are a couple of images in the book I would have never put in a book, but how they made the sequence suddenly makes sense to put some images in. Yeah, this is what was so nice for me, and the great experience to work with other real great people who have their own vision on my work, and I still like it, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes it's curious, because given that, like, they're giving you an opportunity to publish, and you're rescinding some amount of control. I mean, it's all of your photography, but I'm just thinking, would I be comfortable with that myself? Or would I weigh out, well, this is a great opportunity, and also having people who are going to make connections or sequences or present the work in a way perhaps you would have never come to yourself, or make the choices that you would not have made, I think if you surrender to that part of the process, clearly that could yield really unexpected successes out of that, based on what you're describing. So I think that's an interesting way to look at. And when I on the podcast, I do often talk about self-publishing, or, you know, putting out zines or your own small run books, and I oftentimes encourage people to go through the process of that themselves. And so the idea, even that taking that leap of faith to have other people to lay out the book for you, how uncomfortable that would probably make me.
I think if you do it yourself, and if you have, you can do it yourself, and then you work with people that do work that you like. I mean, at that time, I knew a couple of books from Hoxton Mini Press, and there wasn't one book that I didn't like in the way that it was made. If you have the chance to work together with people that you like, then it's always a good idea to take this step back. Mm-hmm. And I'm really a friend of collaborations. I mean, when I'm working with the musician who did the music for my photo film, for instance, he should bring the best in that's in his mind to my photography. Mm-hmm. Of course, if it doesn't work for me, I would say it. But
sure.
Normally, at first, it's great to be wide open. I mean, I did a collaboration with a painter who painted over my photos and stuff. And this is something really, I mean, part of the photos, you couldn't realize the photo, recognize the photo after he painted over it and scratched on it and something. But it was great result. So why not do it? I mean, I can do my own stuff with the next book or the next exhibition. I really much like that. Cooperating with other people to create something, but you wouldn't be able to do it on your own.
You just said it. There's trust, and that is, I think, in order for a collaboration to be successful, you have to allow the other person to bring their own perspective or vision to the project. Otherwise, you're just directing somebody, and then it's not really a true collaboration. So it sounds like you have a very liberal attitude towards that. And so, and not so protective, or that anything you're doing is so precious that you wouldn't open yourself up to those possibilities. Yeah.
I mean, it, some people, they have photo series, they work 10 years on it, and they have, let's say, 20 images, and everything is very important because it's not so much imagery, and everything is made up with much effort and everything. But that's not the case for me. I mean, I snap around all day, you know. I do such a lot of photos and such a lot of trash and bullshit. And from time to time, there are some nice images.
Right.
But still, it's a lot of imagery. And why not open it up to other stuff as well?
Yeah, that's a good attitude. I love it.
It doesn't work for every image, but for most, yeah.
Yeah, no, but you open yourself up to that possibility, which is, that's admirable, I think. So let me ask you, as a German photographer, and clearly, you know, you made your way to Berlin, you weren't born or raised there. Tell me about what Berlin represents to you and what it represents to the psyche, let's say, of German people in general.
Well, for me, Berlin is everyday life, and it's just my neighborhood. That's how it feels after living 25 years here, having a family here, having a lot of friends here. It's my neighborhood, it's where I live, and it's where I photograph. If I would live in New York or in London or in Hamburg or wherever, I think I would photograph there. And of course, it would be a different book and different pictures, but it would be the same person. And I think for the Berlin Nights book, it's for me, it's more a Christian Reister book than a Berlin book. It's more like it's, as I said, when the publisher says, let's write Berlin on the title so people will buy it and know what it is about. Then I say, okay, maybe other people can relate to it and they make their own story of their Berlin. That said, of course, Berlin is still the greatest city in Germany for me. I wouldn't know where else I could live. And it is because of the diversity, nightlife, culture. And this reflects, I think, in the pictures and in the book. But that said, I mean, some critics were writing something like, yeah, Berlin nightlife, how it is, and the clubs from seen from the inside and stuff. That's not the case. I've never been to Berghain. I've never been to the real cool clubs. I mean, I just go to the discotheque over there, you know. I go to the bar and then that's it. But to some people, it looks like it. And I like playing with these imaginations, you know.
Yeah, it's
also a little bit, even though I don't stage up any photographs, of course, a book is a staged thing, how you combine things and how you put it all together and what image does it show.
I have to laugh because when I was visiting and I was like, I'm in my 50s, I'm not even going to try to get into like a nightclub or, you know, like where, you know, everyone's, you know, like raving or whatever. And so it's comforting to hear you say that as well. But I think you're also touching on something, and maybe from an outsider's perspective. So it's your home, it's where you, your day to day, where you buy your groceries and meet your friends. And yes, it happens to be probably a world renowned city for numerous reasons, and certainly for its nightlife. But I think that one could look at the book and that's projecting their own, like you said, imagination or expectations of, do I go to Berlin and have an experience and live this life? But if you start looking at the photos, it isn't necessarily a glamorous look at like the never ending parties of, you know.
No. I think there are a lot of pictures after the party.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Party's over.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it flips that illusion on its head, which I think is a strength of the way that you're creating these images and what you're, like you said, you're creating a context by what you're choosing to photograph and not photograph, what's in the frame and not in the frame, but then by extension, what makes it into the book and from image to image, whether there's a story being told or a journey being made. And a lot of the photos, the blurriness and the grain and the contrast, to me, it brings a more dour, melancholy kind of, like, clearly these are areas of celebration or parties or alcohol consumption or whatever, but many of the photos actually feel like the party's over.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see it as well. I mean, for me, there's more melancholy and hangover in the book than party and high life. Everybody's happy, you know.
You mentioned earlier when you first arrived in Berlin, it was like what you described. It was a playground for adults, or the fact that it was not long after the wall came down, and there was obviously this sort of carryover from that euphoria. Or can we go back to like what it, can you just tell me what that was? And this isn't necessarily photographically relevant, but from a Westerner's perspective, we had, you know, like an American view of the Cold War and what the Berlin Wall meant and the separation of the two countries. Tell me what it was like to be around in those days.
The most obvious thing was that you had a lot of free spaces, especially in the center of the city, in the where the district Mitte and the district Prenzlauer Berg, which were in East Berlin. There are a lot of old buildings, and the GDR wasn't interested in making them nice again. They built new housings more outside. And so the center was really run down. And there were old people living here. There were artists living here, some kind of bohem. And everything was quite shabby, but cheap and affordable for everybody. And this was still the case when the wall came down. A lot of houses were, you just could go in and live there and squat it or whatever. And when I came in 97, it was 7 years after, or 8 years after the wall came down. So it was a little bit more like law and order again, but still a lot of free spaces. And I remember when I came here, I had a job at an office where I went one day a week, and that was enough to pay my rent, to pay my beer and my toast. And the rest was making music and going out for a party and a beer. So this wasn't really, it was very special, you know?
Yeah.
And in the beginning, when we came here, It took us a couple of months till we found our first apartment, not because you couldn't find an apartment, but we always got up too late to look at the paper where are the new apartments where we could ring, because we were partying all the time and all that stuff. So maybe a glimpse from this is still in my book, but. I am older now, you know. I'm 51. I'm not in my 20s. I won't party all night, but still, it has some references for me to that time as well. When I look at through my pictures from today or from the last 10 years, I also see the 90s. Yeah, it has some personal history references often.
I would argue that it couldn't not have those, like,
of course, yes.
Of course, it's going to appear in the work in one way or another. I mean, it's certainly not an intentional nostalgia where you're trying to recapture something. You know, it's going to influence your work or your way of seeing in other probably more subtle ways. You feel comfortable navigating at night with your camera, and, you know, I'm not necessarily referring to that as like a personal safety issue, but you're thrusting yourself out into the world at night in a big city with people probably under the influence of other, you know, alcohol or drugs, or, and yes, you're 51 years old, or, you know, you're not in your 20s anymore whenever you were taking the photographs, but that didn't feel like a place where you wouldn't venture. You gave yourself, you had permission to be in that world because you were familiar with it.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's not a question. I think that's just me being admiring.
Yeah, but it's nice that you say that, and it's good that you can see it in the pictures. That it's I strongly believe that the strongest work you can make is always the work about your own world. about your own experience, your own neighborhood. So, I mean, I've been to New York, for instance, a couple of times, and I was photographing like hell, but I never think that I could make a good New York book.
Mm.
There's so much New York books from people who live there day to day. And of course, they will be so much closer and so much more into it. But maybe I can do it here because there's not so much Berlin books as New York books.
That's true. Well, you've created a good one, that's for sure. So
thank you very much.
We could wind this down, but just briefly tell me what you're working on now or what's next for you. I know the Berlin book is not brand new. I'm coming to it now, but what are you currently involved with? What are you working on now?
Well, it's always a little bit, I don't like speaking about projects when I don't know if I will ever finish it or if it will work out or not. But I mean, Berlin Nights in a way goes on. I still work at night. I still make these kind of images, maybe in a little bit different way. I did a project in lockdown Berlin, which was very interesting because at the beginning I thought I can do nothing because I always combined my empty Berlin with people, and now there were no people, and I thought just the empty Berlin, maybe it's a little bit boring. But then I made a project with a friend, another collaboration. We did a book together, photo book. And now, I mean, Berlin is opening up again, or is open again, and I still carry on doing this kind of imagery. On the other hand, I have one or two projects going on that I don't want to talk about.
That's fine.
Photographically.
That's fine. Yeah.
But what I did in the last couple of years was a little bit of silkscreen printing, doing my own prints, which is another form of dealing with my own imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of pictures that I would put in a book would maybe not work as a single print, but other kind of pictures work as a single print. They don't need this context around. And silkscreen printing is just something very analog again, mm-hmm. and something that I really like to approach photography from different sides. And so this is one thing that I do. And just a couple of months ago, I started to make music again because I'm planning another photo music project. And this time I thought maybe I do the music myself. And I'm just programming a lot. I said all on the PC now, you know, making beats and stuff and playing keyboards. Like it's a lot of playing again, you know?
It's
time again, maybe 1 or 2 years, I'll do everything. And after that, I would say, okay, what can I use for my photos? And at the moment, I'm also trying out some Instagram reels, you know, just little small slideshows that work with 5 or 6 images, but still need some music or something to make it stronger. And this was one of the intentions to get into the music making and making little tracks for these small films. Again, I mean, I take my own images and then first I cut it right and left to fit it on an iPhone screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's again something just looking at another side of the photograph, you know.
Yeah.
Does it still work or do you destroy the image? Is the image strong enough to survive if you cut it? Normally you wouldn't do it with your fine art prints, but maybe on the internet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it allows a lot of experimentation. And I like how you just described that you're coming at it from all different ways. And it's like an Instagram reel has its own constraints that you're playing within. But it also, I think it just, all of those things expand your broader view of how you're creating whatever kind of art you're creating, whether it's music or printing. Or do you process and print all your own stuff? Do you develop your own film and work in the darkroom?
I mean, I switched back to digital. We didn't talk about that. When I photographed black and white film the first couple of years, then mm-hmm. I got back to digital, but learned to photograph with the digital cameras as if it was a film camera. So still not turning the ISO up and up and up that everything is sharp. Also not auto-focusing all the time and stuff.
Yeah.
So today I'm again, a digital photographer, if you want to say it like this. And if I want to do proper prints, I go to a printer.
Who knows how to do it? I won't hold that against you.
No, I just don't like printing machines and ratata ratata, and it doesn't.
Yeah, it's about shooting. Working with the camera is more important to you.
Yeah, it's important to make books. It's important to make scenes. It's important to make exhibitions, and it's important to have prints. But it's not important that I do everything on my own.
Okay. You
know?
Yeah.
If I know how the print, what paper I want, how it should look like, and I have a printer that I trust. Again, it's about trust. And he does it like I like it, and he can even do it better than me. Then it's cool deal, because I can use the time for trying out new things with music or whatever.
So I don't know if you're familiar with the term in English, being a control freak.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you're not a control freak.
Yeah, it depends. I mean,
I was trying to give you a hard time, but it's just obviously the German precision approach of everything.
But not in Berlin.
No, right. It's a whole other world. It's not like the rest. It's certainly not like the rest of Germany.
I mean, it's like New York is not America, is it?
Yeah, no. It's not. As soon as you cross the Hudson River, it's a completely different world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, Christian, thank you so much for taking time out and talking with me. And I look forward to whatever you're going to do next. But thank you specifically for discussing the book with me. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much for having me.
So there you go, folks. My conversation with Berlin-based photographer Christian Reister. Really enjoyed chatting with him, not only about photography and his photography book, but also music and life in a big city and all sorts of fun stuff. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I will share links to Christian's work, his website, his Instagram, and where you could find his published photo books. And I encourage you to get your hands on a copy, specifically the Berlin Nights book, which I really treasure quite a bit. So that's it for today's episode. If you have any questions or comments about this episode or any other things that I've talked about, please go to my website, righteyedominantpodcast.com, and scroll down to the bottom and you'll find a spot where you could send me a question or comments. I'd love to hear from listeners. Also, if you could go to the platform of your choice and give me a rating or a review, that always helps me build my audience. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Right Eye Dominant Podcast. I have been your host, Nick Toro Jr. And until next time, stay well. This podcast is a production of righteyedominant.art. The music and sounds for this episode are courtesy of The Conic Project, The Free Music Archive, and Yazar.